we're going to take.
Okay.
Hello. 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 It's Taking It Down. It's the Alabama Takes podcast for TV, movies, music, and general pop culture. Why should you listen to us and not others? That's the question I think you're asking yourself if you're just tuning in. Look, we don't get into the bullshit behind the scenes Hollywood crap that no one cares about outside of Los Angeles. We don't know it, and we don't care about it. We give you straightforward, down-to-earth analysis that lets you know if a show or movie or music is any good and why we think it. We don't need anything more highfalutin than that. Consider us your friends who've watched the movie or the show with you, and we're ready to talk on the ride home from the theater. That's us. Welcome us into your living room, your ears, your car. I'm one of those friends, and I'm the host of Taking It Down. I'm Blaine Duncan. Take advantage of our time steps and show notes and help navigate all of our episodes because we put those times in for you to avoid spoilers. All right? And if you don't already, you should subscribe to all that's going on with the Alabama Take on social medias. Those announcements, and you'll see whenever writings appear or a new podcast appear, and it'll help you figure out what you like, what you want to read, what you want to see. This week on Taking It Down, this show right here, we are going to focus on the finale, an overall season of the Apple TV show Severance. We'll do that in the back half, and we're going to also talk about the second episode of the Disney / MCU series Moon Knight. Joining me today, we got the usual crew, one of them chiming in right now. This guy just ran 255 miles this morning. It's Adam Morrow.
Heck, I'm here. I'm glad to be here yet again. This is good. We're back on our routine. I missed you guys.
How many miles you put in this morning?
I didn't run this morning because I got a pretty busy Sunday on tap. We're recording a little bit earlier and some behind-the-scenes talk here. Recording a bit earlier than normal because I got to run to Birmingham to play with old Duquette Johnston. So all that to say, I ran a lot of mileage the last few days and none today.
And here, you guys know him. You love him. He is the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars series. It's Donovan Reinwald.
Great to be here, Blaine.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, let's do the listener of the week. Listener of the week, that's how we open these days.
Is it me?
Until we run out. It's not you, because you don't listen.
How do you know? Well, I don't listen, but how
you
do you know me. That I don't listen? Yeah, that's
you
true.
Told, you, I said, do you go back and listen? You said no. That's how.
Yeah, how do you know?
Our listener of the week, we're going to give it to I'm going to be a little sincere with the listener of the week this week because it is going to go to 87 Jetta. I bet he listens to almost every episode. I bet he listens to at least the bullshit part of this because he tends to send me a note. He DMs me and like chimes in with a joke. But if he's watched the show, he's prone to listen to what we like. If he watched the TV show we're talking about, he's prone to chime in his comments on our webpage too.
Yeah, yeah.
So thanks, dude. I won't call him by his real name. He doesn't go by his real name online, so I know him. He's a really kind-hearted guy, really cool guy, really knowledgeable guy, too. I've tried to rope him in to write for the Take because he's got cool stuff to say.
Does he have that insider knowledge that we don't?
No, I don't know. Maybe. Well, he does probably about Alabama sports, maybe.
There we go. He's really that's...
He's knowledgeable about UA. He's a Crimson Tide fan like us.
A good guy.
So yeah. Kudos to you, 87 Jetta, and holler at us again. Let's see what we got for us. Adam, you watched a skateboarding documentary on Tony Hawk specifically.
I did. I heard a lot of buzz about it this week, and found myself a little time on Friday evening, and thought, hey, why not? It's a Sam Jones directed piece.
That's promising.
Yeah, so it had a lot of the credentials, and you know, I feel like if you grew up in a certain era with skateboarding on the X Games and video games
the
being
ace
sold
of spades.
In mass,
the yeah. Ace of Spades.
Did you
exactly?
Did you, is that song not stuck in your head because of Tony Hawk skateboarding?
There's a lot of songs that are permanently etched in my brain because of that. Yeah. Like the one okay, from the first. So my first encounter with the Tony Hawk games, they sent out. Remember when you'd order a pizza and they would send you a demo of a game? And it only had like yes. one level?
Why don't they do that anymore?
It was so great. So everybody would just at least play the hell out of like the first level of a game. And I had the Tony Hawk one and played the absolute hell out of it. Because, you know, they chart this. Anyway, the documentary, very good. I didn't really know much about him as a, you know, because he kind of came from that time when skating went from just kind of a regional, well, not regional, but, you know, several regions fascination to, like, him being, like, the Tiger Woods of weird sports. You know what I mean? He's all over ESPN. He's blah, blah, blah. So they kind of...
More than that, he seems like an all-around nice, cool guy, right? Is that, does the documentary confirm that or rebuke it?
It confirmed it to me. And he's very... You know, for these guys, it's not like watching like the Michael Jordan doc or like a football documentary or something where there is a clear shelf life for how long they can do their sport, you know? These skater guys are still all doing it. All the guys that he came up with, if they're physically able, are still, you know, they show him at like a reunion skate thing and they talk about a bit of that Tiger Woods kind of mentality of like, I'm going to do this until my body falls apart and I'm going to try this trick or whatever. And they show him get a concussion. Like, you know, he's like in his 50s now and they're still out on these giant half pipes doing it. And so that's the tail end of the doc, but they kind of weigh all of them weigh in on the wisdom of being an older body and still doing these tricks. But I did learn a lot about as it was growing. He kind of, you know, they were like inventing tricks left and right. And even like the way that you launch out of a half pipe, he wasn't strong enough to do it the way that the other guys did because he's, you know, he's gangly now. But the footage of him as a teenager was, he's just skin and bone. So he invented like a whole new way of doing that. I'm sure that the skate aficionados listening would correct me on how they presented that information maybe. But he was kind of, there was some older folks, slightly older folks, who didn't like Tony Hawk and didn't like the direction that he took skating, even though he just kind of happened to be this very, very talented and driven and marketable guy. I don't think he really...
Yeah.
It never painted him to be like a guy who's like, I'm going to commercialize this. He's not that guy.
No, he's synonymous with skateboarding for anybody our age.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who else can you think of?
I can name nobody else.
I can, yeah.
We can name people.
I used
people,
to be able
but,
to.
Yeah.
No, I can't name anybody else.
Back when I was playing the game, I could have named a couple. So, HBO Doc?
HBO Doc. It's very good. It's 2 hours. It's a bit of a time commitment. But, you know, I'd recommend it. And it does a good job tying it in culturally. And, you know, because so much music came from that. That was like a... Liking that music was kind of... like sticking a signpost in your in your lawn when I was in middle school and early high school of like, you know, you're different than the folks around you. So it kind of ties into all of that.
Give me an example of a band or two.
Just all of that. I'm awful with my punk band names, but
Blink-182 or we're talking prior than that.
Like prior to that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
MXPX.
The real punk. Yeah. Stuff. They don't go too far into the music, but he does do a nice job, Sam Jones, of saying, like, this became a cultural phenomenon. Here's how. And he also does a great job of, for people who don't, I would die if I got on a skateboard at this point.
Yeah, me too.
He explains why a trick is impressive, you know, and, like, what the evolution of it and why it's scary. You know, they'll say, like, well, they dumb it down, like, we have to land with your back to your landing zone, and you've already done all these twists, and do you know where you are in the air? And so they kind of get you up to speed on, like, how they think about things. And it's really interesting.
Damn. I kind of wish I would have watched it. I had some downtime last night and instead watched a part of a movie. I should have thought of that one.
I think this is one that if you were interested, you know, you said you watched part of a movie, you could definitely press pause.
Watch it in parts.
In the middle of it.
Yeah, documentaries tend to be like that. That's cool. Let's get into one of our big segments this week. which is, I wanted to return to Disney Plus show Moon Knight. And here's my opinion. I think it's easily one of the better Disney Plus shows of the MCU.
It's certainly coming out strong.
That's my opinion, and I'm going to get into why. Adam was a little bit of a disagreement last week, and we're going to see if he continues to disagree. The reason why I think it worked so well is because Oscar Isaac's believable. When he's doing these two, when he's doing Stephen Grant and Mark, the mercenary, I found myself thinking that there really were two characters. I got lost in it for a second and thinking, oh, these are two characters, different people talking to one another. And the way that he changes it up is so well done. His eyes, his walk, his stance, the accent, obviously, which is hilarious. The wit. This may be the funniest Disney Plus show, the funniest unforced Disney Plus show. And I think that's a credit to Oscar Isaac. He delivers this stuff without, he's just good. He's maybe one of the better actors of our time because you could tell he's put the work in, but he does it all seamlessly. He cracks a joke and it doesn't hinder. It's not like putting a spotlight and saying, look, I've told a joke. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So this is one of the major reasons why I think it's one of the better Disney Plus show. And it's examining something I think that's a little more in depth than maybe we've seen since WandaVision.
I agree. You said we'll see where I stand on it this week. I thought this episode was a big step forward. It didn't, not a step forward, but we learned more about the characters and it was compelling and I was less distracted by the format, I guess.
Donovan, you big Oscar Isaac fan, you got more to add on just what he's doing there?
Gosh, on what he's doing there? I think you summed it up pretty well. It's even everything just from the way he carries himself.
I'm not so sure I don't have a man crush on Oscar. That's what's happening here.
I told Natalie, I was like, is it weird that I just enjoy looking at him on screen? Like, it's not he's a compelling person, a compelling figure. And I, you talked about the way that he changes his expressions and all of this. And the show is going to be a certain level of quality just because he's so good.
I agree. Keep the camera on him, and you can't go too wrong. And so far, they've kept the camera on him.
He's been in every scene.
And the I think they've done it very cleverly with the Stephen Mark type thing, so that it feels like you have, even when he is in every scene, it feels like there's more than just Oscar Isaac talking to himself.
If they were to start the third episode with you unaware on which character you're looking at, he will tell you without saying a word.
Yeah.
You'll know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's fantastic, I think. And that's not to dismiss or diminish Ethan Hawke, who's one of my other favorite actors.
I was going to say, it helps when every scene is either Oscar Isaac carrying it or he's talking to Ethan Hawke. Like, that's a pretty good recipe for success.
Yeah. How did Disney pull this off? Both of them seem like not...
They don't fuck around.
Yeah, they don't seem like the normal Disney cast members, I guess you could say.
Money is a big thing. They can get anyone because of money. I think the second thing is the script. I think both of those guys, I've seen them comment on it, that they both felt like it was a in-depth enough script that they could... Especially Oscar Isaac, he's getting to do kind of a fun thing where he's playing at least two characters so far. I'm not so sure we won't see a third character who may even be more in charge than the Mark.
You think so? What makes you think that?
Well, in the comics, I think there's a character called Jake that's also in there.
Okay.
And that's just a rumor. And I just thought that it would be Disney Plus shows, they love a twist, And that wouldn't surprise me if, like, in the fourth episode we find out there's a guy, this Jake character who's in the comics, one of the personalities. That wouldn't shock me.
Lord, I'm going to be lost by the end of this.
I liked when they had them wearing name tags, and his removal of the name tag in this episode was very, very upsetting to me.
Steven with a V. No, which one are you now?
Is there like a closed captioning option that they put the names on little floating bubbles that follow the guys around the screen? That'd be great.
So we get an introduction of his wife here, physical introduction. You got thoughts about her. be thinking about those thoughts because I'll introduce her. She plays Rami's sister in the Hulu series Rami, and I'm glad to see her. She's on that show. She gets quite a bit of screen time there, but she's used well there. She brings a lot of logic here because I find it odd that she knows about him being controlled by a moon god, but not his disassociative order. So I shouldn't have said logic. I should have said illogic here. But having her as the next avatar does make sense as far as motivation for Mark continuing to work for a god figure who's not so nice.
Is it illogic, or is it that this disassociative thing is something new since whatever happened?
I suppose that's it. Yeah, I suppose that's it.
Yeah, we're slowly uncovering like the inciting incident, right? Am I right in feeling that way?
I assume so, because Mark's in control now. Steven's not in control. We're gonna get some more backstory, I bet, at some point here, pretty soon. She did a good job. I don't think I have a lot more than that to say about her right now. She kind of didn't have a lot to work with. I think.
Not yet.
Yeah. So given what she had, I thought she was perfectly entertaining. I assume we're going to see an expanded role for her.
I liked how they raised the stakes immediately with her when it felt like it could turn to something kind of cliched when she's in the flat with him and they're talking and then the two, supposed cops show up and she just disappears. And that was a really nice, even beyond like somebody hiding in a bathroom or something like that. It just felt like, okay, she's already existing at a different pace. The story has to catch up to her. That shot of her standing in the outside the window, and they shot it in such a way that it was very dizzying, even though, I say only. In the world of Marvel, I guess, only 4 or 5 flights up is, you can say that, but they got full value out of that height.
Yeah, introducing her as a part of the action rather than a pawn of the action that's nice. I think that's what I was enjoying about her. You're right, although she didn't have a lot to do in this episode, but I do enjoy that she's not going to be quite the pawn. She's one of the mercenaries, I think, that Mark was... The story is, that I've pieced together, and I may turn out to be wrong, is that they were both these mercenaries in Egypt doing something. He died, and the god... help me with the pronunciation.
I think it's Khonshu.
Khonshu took him over, resurrected him, which is perfect because, Steven in episode 1 did say, "Am I dead?" In a joke. And he is, I think. That's the thing. And so what she probably didn't realize he was dead before Khonshu took him over, but she knows about it now or something, probably that. And I do find the plot to be okay for, when you dive into these Marvel things, you leave a lot of your logic off into another room. But this one, I think, is even just fine because you got this Egyptian god controlling Mark and Steven versus another Egyptian god. And their differences is one wants to punish after the fact, one wants to punish before the fact. And that, to me, is a pretty good premise. I find that to be a lot better than some of the bad guy, good guy stuff in MCU or in definitely DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's so much better than I need a mother box.
Yeah.
Or that's DC. Let me be fair and compare it to something in MCU. To me, that's a little bit better than I need an Infinity Stone, I guess. Though that was a lot more in depth than just I need an Infinity Stone. Anyway. It's like, okay, these gods have these beliefs and they've already existed. What if they were real and what if they took over 2 people or at least influenced 2 people? And that's an okay thing, I think. I don't know. I'm just on board with it.
Maybe it's a credit to the 2 actors in the scene, but the sequence where Ethan Hawke is showing him headquarters, essentially, and says, "Oh, you're vegan. We have a wonderful lentil soup."
Did you like that?
I did, because I have been told about the lentil soup many times when explaining that I don't. Anyway, when they're walking in and, he can hear the god talking to him, Ethan Hawke says, "Oh, you don't have to listen to him. Don't worry about it. He can't do anything except pitch a little fit." And there's stuck in, thrown around the room. When they start talking, the opposing philosophies. I was really in it with Oscar Isaac's character and, like, how much is your head spinning in this moment? Like, they're both so good at what they do, and he's being asked to make this choice that I say this to agree with you and to support that, like, that doesn't happen to me that much in a Marvel universe.
Right.
Even the gray areas are still pretty black and white, and this was much more... I mean, it's obviously the choice is fantastical, but it's still entertaining to think about.
Kudos to Marvel. They're getting better at this because in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, although we ended up not really liking that overall, that idea that, okay, half the population had disappeared 5 years ago and then they suddenly reappeared five years ago, now they reappeared. We've taken over their houses and land and we don't want to give that back. And do you deserve it back? And, you know, that was such a good thing. That's the kind of thing they need to start unraveling. This is a little bit more simplistic than that, but I think because it works is because it's already existing IP, if I dare say. Egyptian gods. This Egyptian god believed this. This Egyptian god believed that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's give them avatars. Fine. Let's see what happens. And that's good, and I'm with you. When Stephen was saying he narrowed it down real simplistically, you're talking about maybe killing a kid. Are you going to kill a kid?
Right.
Yeah.
And then when he looks at the room and says, "You all believe this?" That was great.
Yeah.
Another thing that's going, I think the action is still easy to follow. It's not lost me, even though he's doing this suit change. It's easy to follow. He throws a punch. I see where it lands.
The suit bit was funny, too.
I was going to ask about the suit bit.
Oh, the three-piece kind of suit
you said
thing?
Suit.
Yeah. I thought that was fine.
Very obvious Marvel gags. That's pretty fun.
Apparently, there's a QR code in the storage unit in this episode that'll take you to a free Moon Knight comic. But you can get there without the QR code. Adam, you did mention the lentil soup, but I was going to ask, would eating a whole steak make you see someone who's not there? You're our vegan in the room.
Yeah, maybe so. It would do something.
Definitely send you to the bathroom.
Yeah, it would be motivating in some way, I'm sure.
See, that's how that bathroom got wrecked.
Now we've uncovered
steak.
It. Yeah.
Any guesses for his mom? You know, surely we're going to find out that because we got Mark and Steven in the same body, and the disassociation does make me curious on how the character will factor in. Because you don't see the mom. His wife mentions, Layla mentions, you haven't talked to your mom.
Yeah.
Or maybe the vice versa. You have or something.
And he's always leaving her messages, right? He's never talking to her.
Yeah, that's got to play out, of course. Of course it will. Yeah, I'm raving about this one. A lot has to do with Ethan Hawke and Oscar Isaac. And I don't know, the writing's pretty good too so far. Hope they don't drop it. Any other thoughts? Disney or Moon Knight?
I think you've summed it up. It's a good hang so far.
It is a good hang.
I was excited on Wednesday, you know, when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I've got another, you know, like, can't wait to see where this goes.
That, of course, being a part of their brilliance to release this once a week, that's the way to do it.
Now, is this a six-part series?
Six-part.
Okay, so we're almost at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about next week, too, because I talked last week about having to learn the rules of a new story. I feel like now I didn't think about that at all when I watched it this week. So this third episode should be fun to just fully enjoy the immersive experience instead of... Mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared to think as much as I need to think. For a Marvel show, you know.
Well, exactly. That's a good point. Let's take our break, and we're actually going to wish Adam farewell because he's off to play Get Ready for a Show. And Donovan and I are going to come back on the other side to talk about huge ending of Severance and the last two episodes of that show. All right.
The secret is there is no show. I just don't want to have Severance spoiled, so I'm leaving early.
That's fair. There is plenty to see on the AlabamaTake.com, including our two head writers, T.D. Wood and Patrick Akers, getting you lots of entertaining essays and takes nearly every week, especially with Patrick. T.D. is back in the saddle doing a lot of weekend six-pack for you, covering what you need to know and think about in the sports world. And if you are a wrestling fan, Patrick often covers AEW wrestling, as well as a little bit of WWE. So jump on the alabamatake.com and find those. But if you are on the other side of the coin and you just want some witty and humorous book reviews, our staff writer Laura has you covered there. And coming soon is the return of the This Song Sucks for its third season of that podcast. All of that is on the site. All of it you can get notifications for by following us on social media so you don't miss anything. Follow the Alabama Take on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. All right, let's get, here we are, we're back, second segment. Yeah, what are we doing here? Severance.
Wait, it's starting to feel like that word has multiple meanings, isn't it?
Go on.
Well, there's severance, and then there's also getting fired.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this show has messed with me just a little bit, so honestly...
I'm just saying the stupidly obvious here.
Well, no, that was the stupidly obvious thing when before I started watching like episode one. But that's gotten lost to me in, I guess, plot, honestly. But This series, if you are unaware, go watch it. I think we both highly recommend it, right, Donovan?
I think so. It's kept me entertained and. I do think that
it's not cheap, is it? I know it's got thrills and twists and turns.
I don't think it's cheap.
I didn't think so either.
And I do think that it's still, we'll see what happens, especially with some of the twists that came out of the ultimate episode. But I don't think it's quite lost sight of some of the bigger themes that it's dealing with.
All of that I definitely want to get into in specifics, so if you haven't watched the last two episodes, just come back to us. And do watch those last two episodes, then come back to us. It is a seven episode?
I think nine.
It's a nine episode show. Okay, and here are a few of what you might want to know in case you're deciding. It's brought to you by Ben Stiller. He directed several episodes, not the mid episodes, but he directed several. He got the show together. It stars Adam Scott. You remember him from Parks and Rec. Brilliant actor. John Turturro, high-level acting. John Turturro and Christopher Walken. Britt Lauer, who's a little new, at least to me. She is. She plays a major role, though, and does a good job. Patricia Arquette never fails. Zach Cherry, doing a little dramatic work. You might know him from mainly comedic roles. And we got Trammell Tillman, who's, I think, probably new to almost everyone watching. If you haven't watched the penultimate episode in the finale, come back to us. We're about to spoil the heck out of it. We've got to. We've got to talk about this. Donovan, the waffle party and that satanic ritual that he watched. What is that?
That's got to be something, because he's like going to the founder's bed, right? Like, this has got to be something with that, like, the quasi, you know, Lumen is a quasi religion.
Yes, absolutely.
Which I think is so interesting. You know, if you remember, I had sort of halfway remembered a book that I read about how religion can kind of push back against late stage capitalism, or that aspects of religion that can push back, and
just
and,
a fascinating concept.
And so to have Lumen itself as a religion, where it is that kind of total, as Paul Tillich would put it, it's a matter of ultimate concern, is really fascinating, because I think it kind of literalizes what is so often beneath the surface. On our workplaces.
Or better yet, do what America has done and just kind of sort of keep them barely separate but intertwine them with the politics.
Yeah.
So that capitalism and Christian evangelicalism they go hand in hand, and if you vote one way, you're voting the other.
Yeah.
You know, that's the trick. I think that making your workplace an actual religion is a little... That part is probably fiction in a way, though you see it, people wanting that to happen. You see CEOs and corporations wanting that to happen. I don't know that it ever will,
No, I don't know that it ever will, but I think that it, that's kind of what I meant with it, literalizing something that is unspoken.
Beautiful.
Even just like, it is kind of like capitalism as religion.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, people on the right, I don't know if they were conscious of this, but they may have realized that we can't do that exactly. What we can do is just tie them so that you can't untie them.
Yeah,
and tie, you know, put them together so that you can't untie them.
And that's how Lumen feels for the innies that work, and like they're only allowed to read the manuals. The art is all about the founders. You know, the whole culture of it is so that they can't think about anything else but work.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like horrifying. Like when they say,
yeah, it's a horror. This show is horror. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think that in the penultimate episode, I guess some of this has started to drop, but I thought that Helly would be Mark's wife.
Really?
Yeah, I did. But that, as we know now, that would have been too obvious. Instead, it was Miss Casey.
I'm pleased with the... I'm a little not sure how I feel about the twist that it's Miss Casey. I'm very pleased with the twist of who Helly is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes a lot of things make a lot more sense.
Uh-huh.
Especially how determined her outie is to keep her in.
Yeah. And, you know, we speculated she might be a reporter, and that's why she's, you know, but it's... that's not similar, but it is, that does make sense that her warning is stay in there. Yep. Trammell Tillman is a guy I mentioned at the top of this segment. He, man, is he doing work as Milchek or what? Like, there's your MVP, right?
He had possibly the funniest line of the episode as he's trying to cut through, you know, the belt or whatever it's called in the door closes. He's like, I got perks you don't even know about. Do you want a coffee koozie? I can get you a coffee koozie right now.
I almost hit pause and Googled coffee koozie. I almost did that. Like, what is a coffee koozie exactly?
It's for if your coffee's too hot.
Yeah. I love that. Because, you know, we have beer koozies or Coke, you know, whatever can koozies. Tillman, though, go back an episode and... His dancing during the perk of we get to spin a record, you get to pick a record and an instrument. Oh my God. Go back and watch that scene. Hilarious and scary the same time.
He has been perfect as, like, not just the enforcer, but the perks guy, where, and it's just like you exactly said, like, they're hilarious and they're scary at the same time. They're kind of inane, but you're expected to react and be a certain way just because you got this one perk, you know, like the dance party, which is pretty dumb and inane, but it kind of forces you to act a certain way, and Milchek is there to make sure that you act that certain way. It is scary.
Apparently, all of those actors were allowed to do their own thing during the dance, and they all came up with that. So Milchek's dancing is all Trammell Tillman.
Is it? He's doing he's doing the Lord's work.
And Adam Scott doing the little white guy thing is all Adam Scott. So it was great. So the finale, I thought, was, it did things perfectly in that it took advantage of all the episodes that came before it. You know, you're itching as badly as the characters are to see what their lives are like on the outside with their outies. In Mark's case, you're just, you're on the edge of your seat to try to push him to piece things together. It's a lot like those old video games where you have a flashlight in a darkened room, and the only way you can even see what's in the room is by turning the controller.
Yeah,
that point of view kind of thing. You know, we have no idea what else is in Irving's house except for what he saw. You know, and unless he went there himself, and we, as the camera and audience, did it. Every scene cut was a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and just the ticking clock worked pretty perfectly to underline that, because you knew that whatever was going on, every action that a character took restricted some other action. Mm-hmm. So, like, Irving going and say, taking his car out means that he's not doing something else at his home. And that was, I thought, that made it, the ticking clock and the cliffhanger aspect of it really effective. You know, every choice that they made meant they were not making another choice.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Brilliant idea of using an episode from start to finish on them just being their Audi, you know?
Yeah.
Just having it be about that only.
And I thought, I've been, you know, we've talked about some of the acting here. I thought that everyone is actually doing a really good job of, I was especially impressed with Adam Scott this episode, just mm-hmm. as someone who, just the way he seems to play someone who is confused and he's trying to piece it together, and you can kind of feel that tension mm-hmm. coming off of him when like Mrs. What's her name? Patricia Arquette's character says, "You got tense," and you can see it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing such an excellent bit where he's, okay, not only is he having to play an innie, but he's also having to play an outie, and he's got to play that outie in a party where he is, that character is trying to stifle his surprise in front of people. And you can read all of that in his performance. It's weird that our episode today is covering sort of disassociation or having two personalities
yeah.
in both shows.
Both shows are doing really interesting work with that.
And from my understanding, the second season of Severance is going to have Moon Knight in it. So Oscar Isaac's going to come down that elevator.
You know, I would love to see Oscar Isaac in that cast.
He would do just as amazing, if not, you know.
Because I think you can say about any cast, boy, I would love to see Oscar Isaac in that cast.
Sure. What about Chris Walken's goodbye video? Where what's the line he says? Good luck, buddy, or something like that.
Yes.
He's saying goodbye to himself. It was kind of funny, but we do get the confirmation that he was allowed to retire. He's not dead because he's in his house in the last episode.
Yeah.
So, not sure. But he's also, it looks as though he is in a gay relationship, maybe. So that part was
He seems to have a partner. That, you know, obviously he had no idea about on the inside.
Of course. I don't know that we've seen this level of heightened what next tension since maybe Breaking Bad on TV. Better Call Saul. I'll use
that. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think pretty much every episode has ended with, like, they've chosen a perfect moment to end.
And I'm talking about the finale.
Oh, like okay. I thought you were talking about it overall. Because I was thinking the episode where Helly tries to hang herself is such a perfect cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But
it is. That ratcheted tension of what next in the finale, did it give you too much of that? Did you can get too much adrenaline. Did that get too repetitive of an emotion for you for the finale?
I don't think so, because the whole... They did a good job of basing the whole episode around that.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a good job of intercutting in between the different characters who were doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you needed a little bit of a break from Mark, you could go mm-hmm. to Helly or John Turturro's character. Yeah, or Dylan, who's just doing one thing the whole time.
Well, he's doing one thing, but it was such a... gripping, you know, you were on the edge of your seat even with that.
Yeah,
even though he's just turning knobs.
Can he do it?
Helly being a bit more affected by the creepy 8-bit "I love you" certainly made sense.
Yes,
gosh, that was really
creepy. I really, really enjoyed the just the whole vibe of that 8-bit.
Yeah, yeah. When she met her quota. So I went into this show. This is on me. It is not on the show, so I do not dock the show whatsoever. I was a little disappointed because I went into this show thinking it's going to be this screed against capitalism, and it was in pieces, but it ended up being a lot more of what makes yourself you. What ideas did you see the show examining?
Well, I did see it examining kind of your workplace as this totalizing force that will take you over if you allow it. And this idea of having a work self and, you know, a personal self kind of gets to the heart of someone who, you know, I think we've all met people who have done things and would say, like, well, that's just business. That's not who I really am as a person. And this is kind of literalizing that, right? Mm-hmm. That separation between who I am as a person and who I am as work. And of course, you know, like existentially speaking, I think you can't untwine the two. And this one is kind of playing with that too. Like if you are the sum of your experiences and memories and all that, then what happens when you become two different people? And I think it's kind of played with that in a really cool and interesting way. Like Dylan, we know Dylan has children on the outside. On the inside, he's obsessed with Perks.
And women.
Yeah. And is it, how much of a different person is he?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I like that. I also saw it as an appropriate assessment on Ambien's effects. When 3 days later in the mail you get a package from Amazon, you go, oh, I ordered that?
You know, one of the things I've really enjoyed, this is just a little aside, about the show itself is how it's always, daytime is always at work, nighttime is always outside of work, but daytime is always that fluorescent, you know, it feels disorienting to me watching it.
It does. No, it does. And their after work is in the winter, which makes it darker earlier, and they're in the Northeast, which you're very familiar with.
Yes, it gets dark pretty early.
Is it a little bit more depressing in the Northeast than it was in Alabama in the winter because of the early, even if it's not snowing?
I think it can get you.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it'll be, you know, it'll be pitch black by 5 o'clock. And if you're, you know, working a job like they are, where they're literally coming up out of a basement and then they're not seeing the sun.
Rarely.
Or they're hardly seeing the sun.
Yeah, on the way to work, that would be about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough. Yeah, that's good. Good point. And I read an interview Alan Sepinwall did on Rolling Stone with Ben Stiller, and he noted that was a key part, that he kind of lucked out with it being filmed there. But they roped that into part of the idea. The other thing that Stiller mentioned was they did not film this like a normal show. It was not episode film, episode 2 filmed, episode 3 filmed, that they filmed bits and pieces of the entire series and then pieced it together in episodes.
More like you would a movie.
More like, yeah. Yeah. Maybe. So I don't think he did that completely, but that was a big part of it. And
I wonder how that worked with the different directors too.
From my understanding, he did not specify, but I think those middle episodes were done in that way and then his episodes were done that way.
Okay. So. Interesting.
We've mentioned that this show is actually funny throughout. One of the humorous bits I found was that woman, Rebecca. Of course, she would say, I've got to change my name again, which was a good nod to the selves we have.
Everything with Rickon's book is cracking me up.
And who else but Rickon would have to flush his sinuses mid-reading?
Yes.
Let's take a break so I can flush my sinuses. who the...
I like to, and it has worked in reflection, 7-minute reflection periods. Yes. The only thing that doesn't make any kind of sense is Mark's sister seems like a pretty down-to-earth person, and it makes you wonder how the heck did she end up with Rickon?
That's pretty realistic, you know?
Yeah, but it gets,
you see that.
It gets right at, you know, his book, The You Are, gets at the heart of it.
Yeah, and the name of the episode was The We Are.
Yes.
That's pretty good. You know, you and I bemoaned at the beginning, and I think we'll both do a mea culpa here about it having a second season.
Yeah.
I think our minds were completely changed with this finale. It's got a lot more world to explore.
I think so. And it did such a good job of sticking with the concerns that it had already, that kind of sticking within the limits of the episode and the concerns that it had set up, while nodding at what are the bigger kind of issues and what might, what, you know, setting it up for the future. I think it did a really good job of that, especially with Helly's segment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm stoked that it's going to have another season, and maybe it'll have, you know, a good two or three season, four season run.
I definitely want to see more with, I'm hoping they explore more of Lumen as religion. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more of that in the second season. I hope it doesn't turn into just, you know, twists and plot for plot's sake. I hope it turns, they're it's still able to kind of explore these big themes that they've tackled, and so far I think pretty successfully tackled.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind it becoming more entrenched in capitalism and that sort of thing too, which it kind of sort of did, of course, but even going even deeper in that. I'm interested in seeing what, why Milchek and Miss Cobell are so involved, even though they're not severed. Why, what makes them so attached to this idea?
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing what is Miss Cobell's real job?
Yeah,
she's more than just a manager. She's a troubleshooter. She's a She's got the creepy shrine at home to
the Egan guy.
The Egan, yeah.
She also is apparently well-versed in breastfeeding.
Yes. There seems to be nothing that she can't do. Also, well, how great is Patricia Arquette?
Dude, I hated her so much in this last episode. And I was just like, get the fuck out of the way, woman. Quit. And that's exactly what she's supposed to do.
Yes. She's great.
Oh, man. Kudos to her. Entire show's great. Where does it land for me? We'll find out at the end of the year. I was invested. I was thoroughly invested, and especially those last two or three episodes, I was just wanting the next one as quickly as possible. If you listen this far, hopefully you've seen it too. Let us know what you think. Let's wrap this week's show and come back next Tuesday. Next week, what are we covering? Maybe another episode of Moon Knight. I know in 2 weeks, we're going to be covering The Batman and The Northman, both movies that week.
I believe it's pronounced The Northman.
Oh, is it really? Are you serious?
The Batman and the Batman. The Northman.
Yeah, we're going to be covering two men movies-ish. Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll come back next Tuesday, follow us on social media. We'll give you a couple of days heads up on what we're covering. And you guys, if you're listening, let us know. Don't be a stranger. Say, hey, I listened. Reach out, follow us, share us with friends. Rate and review us, of course. That's always cool. Every podcast tells you that, but... That's it. We'll say goodbye.